Hey everybody, welcome to the In and After Show. It's me, Yo. Lizzie Leverage, and with me is James Beckett, as always.
Yep.
And I'm sitting here right now thinking, maybe I need to clean my office. My bookshelves are getting a little, they're getting a little wild back there, so forgive me everybody. It's on my ever-growing to-do list. Thanks for joining us for the 103rd episode of the A&N After Show. We're going to be talking about the latest developments in Yatagarasu. There was sort of a big heel turn sort of situation that we found out this week with the attempted assassination on our prince. We're also going to talk about Kaiju number 8. That we've got a new baddie that showed up with some, you know, cool fight scenes. It's just sort of bringing the what you expect, but this is going to be kind of a news heavy episode of the podcast. A lot of news broke. I mean, we've had Summer Game Fest is still kind of ongoing, and you can look Anime News Network tomorrow. We're going to be posting some interviews up, including one with Gen Urobuchi about his new game, Rusty Rabbit. So if you've been following that, you know, there's a lot of gaming news coming out, but what we're going to be talking about isn't specifically games. It's we've got the latest on the new Lord of the Rings anime. We still don't know who's animating it, but Kenji Kamiyama is directing that. We've got some screenshots there. We've got some information about finally getting to watch Sailor Moon Cosmos. If you listen to...
Were we just talking about that last week? Or like
before? It was like the week before. And yeah. I went back through because I was doing some light like editing on the audio version. And I was like, wow, I really went on two separate Sailor Moon rants in a single episode. So for those of you who stuck through that, thanks.
And this is called actualization. If you will it, it will come.
It will. In this case, yeah, it's the two-part Sailor Moon Cosmos movie is finally coming to Netflix this summer. We'll give you the exact date of when you can watch that. We've also got news about a storied studio, Gainax. They have declared bankruptcy. We're going to talk a little bit more about that and why it took so long.
the single broom closet that the studio's been operating out of for the last 15 years finally went under.
finally did. It explains...
The warehouse said they needed the space back for their brooms, and so Gainax had to go.
It explains some IP movement that we saw very recently from Gainax. Like, I don't know, maybe this might have something to do with why Trigger was able to get Panty and Stocking back because of these financial issues, things like that. And we didn't talk about it last time, but a recasting announcement just came out. So this is an opportunity to talk about Toru Furuya and how he lit his entire career on fire at 70 years old. So we're going to... LFR says, again, I thought Gainax was already bankrupt. No, you know, I'm going to...
They downsized, they reorganized, restructured.
They rebranded, there were maybe some shell companies. I can't prove that, so don't repeat that. It's not necessarily true, but I'm not saying it's unlikely based on some of the things that were moving around a couple years back. So, Captain Michael says Gainax had to pay back unpaid royalties to Anno. Yes, they did. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they owed him money for Evangelion, and he wrote
a lot of money.
It was a lot of money.
A lot of money.
Yeah, and he wrote a whole expose about it around the time that Gainax's former president was arrested for... You know what? We'll get into it. We'll get into it. All right. But again, this is A&N After Show. We're here on Tuesday, 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern live. You can also listen to the audio version on your favorite podcast streaming platform or on Spotify, Apple Music, all those sorts of places, Stitcher. So it would be super nice if you left us a review. You can also at me on Blue Sky, A&N Lindsay, all one word, if you want, you know, leave some comments or something you want us to talk about. I am open to that if there's something in particular you'd like to hear us discuss on the show. So, you know, don't be afraid to reach out on there. I rarely check Twitter now because it's a hellhole, but you can at me on there. I will eventually see it probably within the week of you sending it because I check it very sporadically at this point. Okay.
Very good for your overall well-being.
It is actually. taking Instagram I'm on Twitter off my
every
phone.
Day and look at me. So like,
James, yeah. you gotta get off there. I am missing some high quality jokes from you and Nick every once in a while. Like I know that, and sometimes just to check to see if you two said anything, you know, funny. But yeah, I don't have it on my phone out of like work obligation, but I don't log in. Stitcher's defunct now, Lindsay. Well, no one told me. I didn't know that. What is it now?
Oh, is it, I knew Stitcher Premium went away. I didn't know the whole app shut down.
Wow. Well, I'll have to update my spiel for where you can listen to us because I just kind of default and say that, assuming that it's there. I'll need to look at the buttons that we have on the web version of this to see if we've got a defunct Stitcher button now. But all right. So first, let's get into Gainax. This is going to take a little while. There's like a lot of context, okay? So for those of you who maybe are like newer anime fans, Gainax might not be as familiar to you, but they used to be kind of like a mark of quality studio. Like they did Gunbuster, they did Evangelion, they did Gurren Lagann before, you know, Trigger jumped off that.
This isn't like a perfect one-to-one, but if you think of the way that like A24...
Yeah,
in the West right now is kind of like, oh, they're probably going to do something kind of cool and weird and interesting.
Yeah,
that was Gainax for a long time.
That was Gainax for a long time, and so they have a lot of series under their belt that are well known for and are considered sort of seminal works for anime that came out in like the late 80s through the 90s, and like I said, Gurren Lagann came out in the aughts. But they've always had some financial issues, like. They were kind of a bunch of upstarts that put together a studio and were doing their best, but it's not like they necessarily had a lot of experience in the corporate world before things got started. And that seems to have never gotten better.
No.
So Gainax announced that they filed for bankruptcy in Tokyo District Court on May 29th. And it was almost their 40th anniversary. Essentially. So that's kind of sad when you look at the great body of work that they had. But there were all these like little side companies that I think that started popping up in around the aughts to try and bring in more money. This included like a tomato farm that, you know, lasted for a little while where they were growing tomatoes and like selling tomatoes. There was some stuff with the Fukushima prefecture after they had a natural disaster that I want to say it was out of the goodness of their hearts that they were like doing stuff to help benefit recovery, but there was also probably tax breaks involved in doing that because that tends to happen.
I think if you asked Hideaki Anno, he'd say that the goodness of what hearts?
Yeah. Yes. So they incurred massive debts. They lost their spots on production committees because they were not paying royalties. And they were sued for these debts, including by Hideaki Anno at one point. And Studio Caro deliberately started distancing themselves from Gainax as a result of their continued issues. And eventually they weren't really able to make animation anymore because of these piled up debts. A lot of things kind of came to a head in 2018-ish because their president at the time, Tomohiro Maki, who had been the head since 1992. So this wasn't like some new guy who came in. You know, he had been with the company for a long time, but he was arrested in December 2019 for allegedly coercing a voice actress into taking new photos and giving her a massage and all these other sorts of things, claiming that the photos were to like prepare her for stardom and just really shady, slimy bullshit. Okay. Just like bottom of the barrel, gross sort of abusing talent sort of allegations. He got 2.5 years in jail. I don't know how much he served, you know, if he got out on parole or good behavior or any of that, but at the time that he was sentenced, it was 2.5 years. So that led, you know, reorganizing. I'm sure that there was probably some kind of liability or issues that may have also came from that situation, as what happens when you do this to somebody. But they mentioned that they had a bunch of, they had a mismanaged CG company. They were giving large unsecured loans to executives, which is basically like just giving cash handouts that you're never going to get back to upper management to do whatever they want with, I suppose. And just running its business operations as, quote, a small personal venture, which doesn't make any sense for an animation studio that's supposed to keep people employed, right?
The studio that made Evangelion, it's like if Lucasfilm became like a three-person operation that George Lucas just used to
write checks to Steven Spielberg or something.
You can put Oscar on a freaking waffle iron and you'll sell a million units. I don't even think I made that up, but I'm sure that exists. There's Ava everything. Mm-hmm. That one show alone should have kept them afloat for 60 years.
When I was regularly writing interest articles for A&N, a lot of it would be wacky Evangelion merchandise. I think I also had an article under the list when I used to write that. Two of them, I think. Two unique ones. That was just like top 10 Evangelion shit you don't need. Like they had like tackle boxes and fishing gear and the Ava colors, giant inflatable Ray that just showed up at a mall once, like large, like taller than escalators for a two-story building. Do you remember their Razor like tie-in they had? It was just anything you could slap purple and green on it, and you're like, that's the Unit 01. Blender or just some, you know, just...
they hit a perfect color combo with Unit 1.
It was, yeah,
it's not very common, but yeah, that particular shade of green and purple looks really good together. And again, you can make anything those colors, and yeah, you instantly know what it is.
Yeah, so. Yeah. I mean, you can't really make a mecha in those colors now. It's like, that's an Ava 01 reference. As soon as you see it, you're like, oh, well, that must be an homage because they own that color scheme. Like, it can't be associated with anything else.
To even do that, I feel like would be inviting the wrong kind of scrutiny, you know?
Yeah.
Like, it'd be like if, I don't know, again, it'd be like if you made like an action movie in this day and age and you had like a killer robot called the Exterminator or something. Yeah. It's so iconic and so kind of in its own thing that you would have to try really hard to not feel like you were just trying to kind of leech off of it a bit instead of just,
yeah,
like, it's weird. It's just one of those things. I don't know how to explain it, but yeah. Yeah.
25 brings up that it's also the same color scheme as the Joker.
It's true.
But for some reason, I never look at the stuff and think of the Joker.
No.
I think of, yeah, that's weird.
Joker themed tackle box. Come on, DC.
Why did they have to steal from Anno? They're probably, I don't know. This is complete conjecture. They're mad that he left. They have no money and that was bringing them money. These aren't necessarily the most honest business people.
Well, and they've been doing this since Ava. I mean, like, I've read and watched all sorts of things talking about how Anno, you know, there was like a brief period of time where he thought maybe he could help fix things a little bit.
Yeah.
If he, you know, because once he made Ava, like he was, you know, he'd earned his clout, and then he very quickly realized, oh no, this company is going down in flames, I need to get out. It's weird. It's both insane that they managed to screw this up so badly, but given their track record, it's also kind of a miracle that they were still in operation technically past the year, like 2003. Like, it's,
yeah.
Or when did Logan come out, because that was really their last.
Oh no.
2006 ish.
It may have been a little earlier than that. Mm. I remember it being on TV and I remember watching it at my now husband's house. And I can't remember if we were in high school or if we were in early college. So it's hard for me to really like place it. 2007. All right. So it was early college for us. Thanks. I really recommend folks, you can go over to Anime News Network. And I think if you just put into the search Hideaki Anno Gainax, the first thing that comes up is our 2019 article about Hideaki Anno details his falling out with Gainax. So you can go read that if you kind of want like the nitty gritty. He does talk in in there, like James mentioned, of it almost seeming like he knew they couldn't afford to pay him back, and he was kind of like trying to be lenient about it or reasonable because he felt bad for them, and then they offended kind of his sensibilities or something in some way, and he was like, "You got to give me my IP back, guys." No, I'm not letting you do this anymore. So, it's unfortunate that we kind of had to end this way, but I don't know, other than like a whole management overhaul, I don't know if Gainax could ever really bounce back. Yeah.
I wonder if they could, like, I don't know. I mean, it's probably too late for, I mean, given the reputation, but I wonder if it would even be worth it to like sell their name to some bigger studio and then just have Gainax become like a boutique little label or something.
Yeah.
They could like, you know, get their weird new talented artists and let them make little things and call it Gainax. I don't know.
I feel like there's a probably at some point a situation where they were considering selling it off, but they knew that their debt was so high that it wasn't worth it to any potential buyers to like recoup it, you know, because if they bought it out, they're going to incur the debt and have to pay that back. And so you'd have to both get it to, you know, out of the red and then hope that you could still use the name to, and mm-hmm. the idea that they've been taken off production committees for not paying royalties also means you'd have to rebuild a whole bunch of relationships with business people behind the scenes who know that like they're not good for it. So yeah. All right. So our next one, let's talk about the War of Rohirrim. Did I ever figure out how to pronounce that?
Rohirrim.
Rohirrim. Thank you.
Yeah.
The War of Rohirrim. This is the Lord of the Rings animated series coming from Warner Brothers and directed by Kenji Kamiyama, who you might know for Ghost in the Shell Standalone Complex and Blade Runner Black Lotus, as well as Eden of the East. So he's a mixed bag for me. I think we talked about this last time we talked about this series. He's had some big hits and he's had some not so big ones, but you know, I said it was an animated series. My bad, guys. This is a movie that's coming to theaters. This is not an animated series.
Yeah, a 2.5 hour feature length anime targeted towards adults.
Yeah.
In theaters.
Yes. And so we have
it's
now.
It's weird. Like, it's, guys, you don't understand. If you told me that this would happen like 15 years ago, I would have laughed in your face.
Yeah.
That Warner Brothers would put an anime or, you know, a film directed by a Japanese animator that is targeted at anime fans and adults 2.5 hours long, theatrical release. I mean, it's just, it's wild.
It's also set for the holiday season. Like, it's supposed to come out December 13th. So that's kind of a big window as well, like for these sorts of releases. I mean, I've heard people argue that the Peter Jackson trilogy is like our Christmas movies, or a lot of people watch them around that time, like around Christmas or around Thanksgiving for whatever reason. And I think they came out in theaters originally.
I could see Thanksgiving. They got kind of Thanksgiving-y vibes.
Yeah.
I don't know about Christmas though.
People eat food in those movies. That's Thanksgiving, right? it's a 2.5 hour long movie. We also found out that Peter Jackson is producing it. It's being promoted as the first female-led Lord of the Rings animated feature, which is sort of silly because how many Lord of the Rings animated features are there?
I guess technically there's 6 films. I was going to say, how many Lord of the Rings movies are there? I guess if you count The Hobbit, there's 6.
Yeah.
I mean, that's cool. I mean, that's good.
Yeah. But, I mean, I think it's cool that they have the female protagonist.
It is funny when they try to.
I mean, yeah. It's like that moment first ever. And you're like, the only other animated Lord of the Rings features are from when? The late 70s? You know? Yeah. Anyway, we do have some like screen cap pictures, so I'm gonna pull those up here real quick. Yeah, there's an animated Hobbit movie too, and Rankin Bass. Yeah. So this is the article over on Anime News Network. This is our main character here. She's the daughter of, his name is like Helm Hammer you know what? Let's just control
X. Hammerman. Lord Hammer.
Yeah. Helm Hammerhand, the King of Rohan. Brian Cox is playing him. But this is his daughter, and her name is Hera. It's Hera, right? Mm-hmm. Yes. Like,
I love the key art that we've got. I think the character designs look really cool. I'm surprised that they went as anime as they did.
Yes.
With the eyes, especially. Like, it's not trying to... Like, I would say, like, I was expecting maybe more, like, Castlevania.
Sure.
Kind of middle ground, right? But this, like...
Yeah, let me...
It looks like an anime.
Can I zoom in on this? Wait. Yes. Okay. Yeah, when I was looking at her eye style, it actually was giving me Sailor Moon, sort of.
Yeah.
The way that... Like, yeah, a little bit more old school in the eyes. Bubbles. Yeah, the eye design there with the cutouts and everything. The anime, what we've seen so far as the screenshots anyway, it looks really nice. I do wish I knew where it was actually being animated, and it always makes me suspicious when that's not like up front. It just seems a little like, why are you hiding that? Is it because you're not actually animating it in Japan and this is a buzzword type situation? Because it doesn't make a difference. If it looks good and Kenji Kamiyama's directing it and it, you know, looks great, I don't care where the fuck you animated it at. I would still go see it as a great animated picture.
Give the artist credit.
Yeah. So. You don't have to try to like kind of sideways sell it as Japanese if it's not Japanese. I mean, people love Lord of the Rings too, so anyway.
I will say they screened some of it at Annecy,
right?
The reactions I've seen are like very
impressed,
like standing ovations.
Wow.
Very, very enthusiastic about it based off of what they previewed. So I'm honestly like I'm really excited. So
yeah, it's supposed to be like a major prequel to even the Hobbit films. Like the whole time period is centuries earlier, I think, or at least a century earlier than...
I don't know if it's 128 years before The Hobbit or 128 years before Fellowship.
Yeah.
But either way, it's
at least a century prior. And I did like a little bit of digging when we talked about this earlier to see if I could kind of make sense of the placement. But I'm not a huge Lord of the Rings person, so I don't know the timeline and stuff like the back of my hand. But yeah, it looks great. I'm still excited to see more. We'll probably go see it in theaters in December because I bet you it looks really good on a big screen. This is something that I feel like would look great on a big screen. So
between this and that new Looney Tunes movie that they're actually putting out in theaters, Warner, I mean, I don't want to give Zaslav any credit because I hate him, but
yeah,
I'm glad that some of these projects are getting the opportunity to be seen on the big screen. I imagine a lot of it is because Warner's entire slate has been completely screwed up by COVID and the strikes, but still, I will take it. I will absolutely take it instead of it getting dumped onto Max unceremoniously with no advertising whatsoever. So
let's see if I can... All right. We start now. I'm too bright. I do this every podcast, guys. I turn off the lights in my office and close the blinds so I don't look washed out. And then I end up fading away and need more light. And we play this game. Okay. who doesn't? Yeah. Zaslav. So you said there's a Looney Tunes movie, but this isn't the Wile E. Coyote one?
No, this is like a full, it's the first ever, like, front to back, completely animated feature Looney Tunes film.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and I think it's by the crew that did, the designs at least are from, they're the Yellow Gloves, so they're from that recent round of shorts that they did back when Max, like, first launched.
Oh, okay.
So it's like very old school animation style. It looks almost like ripped straight from the 30s not the 30s, in like the 40s.
Okay.
It looks great. So
nice. Yeah. Okay. So two more news items before we get on to Kaiju number 8 and Yatagarasu. Shout out to Netflix for finally releasing Sailor Moon from anime jail. wherever it was. Sailor Moon Cosmos, a two-part movie, came out in Japan a year ago. Netflix will finally have them available to stream on August 22nd. So we will get the conclusion of this.
And that's the end, right? That's the final Sailor Moon arc?
It's the end. It's the last arc. Unless they decide to do some weird stuff with like the short stories collection, which there's nothing in there that you could, other than making a bunch of like cute comedic episodes, you couldn't do anything with those. So yes, this should be the very end. Notably, the Stars arc also, or the Stars season also adapted this arc, but they made quite a few changes, just like they did with Supers. So this will have a completely different ending. Maybe it'll make me cry. If it's any good, it'll make me cry, because if I read the last part of the manga, it usually gets me choked up. So I'm excited to see how it all finally ends.
Did they ever resolve the kind of production art style wonkiness that first season kind of got nailed for?
They did quit outsourcing most of it to the Philippines and airing it on a 2-week digital only release after the first season. That one was really bad. The season that adapted the Infinity arc was better, just kind of bland, but it was better. The problem still remains with the fact that they're like doing a one-to-one with the manga, which has beautiful art, but there's a lot of like use your imagination here kind of stuff to like fill in the blanks. Whereas the original Toei series, had filler, quote unquote, but what I call that is like personality episodes. Where
good filler is great, guys. I've never understood. Bad filler is bad, Demon Slayer, but when it's actually entertaining and fun and you feel like you got your 20 minutes worth, then That's just called another episode of the show. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah. So with Crystal, it was a lot of, well, you've already seen the 200 episodes of the Toei series, so you can just fill in the personalities yourself because you already know all of these characters. But
I hate it when reboots do that. I hate it when they just assume that the core audience already knows stuff, and so I hate that. It should always be, if you've never seen a single second of Sailor Moon before, it should work just as well.
Right. Yeah. So there's just not a lot of those like character building episodes so much. They got a little bit of that in the S, and then it moved into a 2-part movie format. So then the fourth season Dream Arc is just 2 movies. Those are on Netflix. And then Cosmos, which is the Sailor Stars arc, I forget what it's called in the manga, what they call this arc, but again, another 2-part series. And the like animation got better, I guess, is what I'm saying. But without those character moments and like personality to fill it in, you're kind of just left with a very threadbare plot that has some like, it's just, sometimes it's almost a little nonsensical, like kind of throwing some magic things or concepts in there that don't really like jive well. So anyway, I'll watch this last one and see how it goes. Kind of glad that it's over.
Yeah. So would you say that if someone had to pick between the original Toei anime and the new one, would you recommend the original still?
I would definitely recommend the original still. Like, it's not perfect. Like, they're, the first 2 seasons have more simplistic character designs. It's not as like beautiful, I guess, if you compare it to the manga, but it's very funny and very endearing. The characters grow on you really quick. It's got some great emotional beats. It's silly. It's still a show for kids, so it's also silly. But it's, I guess, a comfort show for probably a lot of people, myself included. So you can just put it on and just like, just watch. There's like episode where the characters meet a dinosaur. Like, it's just, so you just got to like accept that part of it. you move into later seasons and things get a little more dark, but there's always still a silliness, even to like the villains. I think it really hits its stride in S. There's a lot of good stuff in R as well, but the second half of R, but it really hits its stride in S. Supers, I think, is also really good, but they made the horrible decision to remove Uranus, Neptune, and Pluto and Saturn from that season for some stupid reason, which is why it, see, I'm on another Sailor Moon rant now, which is why it didn't perform as well in Japan. People liked those characters, and then they just sort
weird.
Of, they exist in the weird. Manga in that season, but they just don't really in the anime, so you don't get Uranus and Neptune and stuff, but then they bring them back in Stars. Stars is fantastic, and it's very gay. So, you know, I feel like once they get to Stars, they're like, yeah, we're not holding back anymore. Like,
subtext is for cowards.
Subtext is for cowards. There's, you know, Sailor Moon's boyfriend disappears for most of it so that we can set up this relationship between her and Seiya, who is like a girl or a guy, you know, that it's complicated, and it was the 90s. So, I mean, yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. So anyway, so watch that. 200 episodes. It's fine. It's fine. You guys keep trying to sell me on Hunter Hunter. Go watch all of Sailor Moon first and then maybe.
Yeah.
One of you have never seen Sailor Moon and you go watch all of original Sailor Moon and come back to me. I'll watch Hunter Hunter.
Or Gintama. You should just watch Gintama.
Just watch Gintama. How many episodes is Gintama? How many times has that show ended?
Oh, I mean,
there, so like, I'm on three final movies or something like that. Yeah.
I'm on episode, I think, like 104. And I think there's like 300 or 400.
Mm-hmm.
I think I'm like 20% through.
Yeah. And Tom is crazy because isn't it like really, really funny? And then it's like, also, here's one of the best sword fights you've ever seen.
Yeah. No, yeah. They've got the good balance. It's the only show, speaking of the conversation we were having last week, it's the only show where I've actually thought, you know what? I'm glad these translators notes are here.
Yeah. Because
the jokes are so dense and so multi-layered that, yeah, I can't imagine how you'd localize most of them.
Yeah.
You just have to be like, look, this is what they're referencing, some show from like the 60s that every grandpa in Japan knows by heart.
Yeah.
Just go with it. I think you could just imagine.
It'd be like putting like a Murder, She Wrote joke into like, I don't know, Bluey's in Australia, so that maybe, I don't know if they'd make that joke, but it would be like putting that into.
Yes.
Yes.
Or like or like a MASH, like a whole episode that's just a spoof of MASH.
And yeah.
You have to explain, like, this is a show that everyone in America liked like decades ago. Everyone on it's dead. Whatever. Like, just.
The only reason I saw it is because Nick at Night used to exist. Let me explain Nick at Night to you, because that's also not a thing anymore. Yeah. But, yeah. That was for when you couldn't sleep on Christmas. You just put Nick at Night on and watch I Love Lucy reruns.
The Andy Griffith Show, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Happy Days. Yeah. Yeah. All right. Gonna end on the best news, of this segment. And that is, who here knows who Toru Furuya is? If you don't know the name, you still know him. He's Char in the original Gundam. His entire voice acting career goes back decades and decades and decades. He was in the Yamato series as Tosuke Tokugawa. He was just in like...
Oh, not Char.
I'm sorry, not Char. He's Rei. He's Amuro Rei. My bad. I'm so sorry to the Char voice actor. My apologies. That's
for once, Char did nothing wrong.
Char did nothing wrong.
In for this. Perhaps the first time, Char is innocent.
Yeah, yeah. He's Amuro. He's also Pegasus Seiya in the original Saint Seiya. That's the wrong Yamcha. He's not that Yamcha, is he? No, he is that Yamcha. Yeah, he was Yamcha in Dragon Ball. And since we were just talking about Sailor Moon, he is Tuxedo Mask / Mamoru in Sailor Moon. So speaking of Sailor Moon's boyfriend. So he crosses over into a lot of fandoms with different demographics, all of that. Unfortunately, he made some bad decisions, multiple bad decisions.
years and years worth of
bad years and years worth of bad decisions. Yes, he's a married man. And just being involved in adultery has kind of screwed up people's careers before in this business. Don't necessarily agree with that in particular, as long as, you know, like the both people are like adults and similar, you know.
Yeah, that's a very big difference between our celebrity culture and Japan's, where,
yeah,
I mean, when a movie star in America cheats on another movie star, that's just a cause for celebration.
Yeah,
for some people, because it's
I mean, I think Kristen Stewart dealt with some backlash when she was found to be having an affair with like a married director at the time, but it's not like her career didn't recover. So
yeah, she's
fine now. But in this case, it wasn't just, you know, like two voice actors, one of them's married, you know, having an affair sort of situation. Furuya met the woman he was having an affair with, who I believe was multiple decades his junior, through fan events. So that's already a bad idea. But then it kind of continues to get worse. He was confronted with this information by a well-known tabloid in Japan called Weekly Bunshin, and usually we don't take like their word as like a primary source here, but they confronted him about it and he agreed to do an interview with them and basically admitted to a whole bunch of stuff for their publication, and then later released a statement that was a little more watered down publicly. What he told Weekly Bunshin was, other than, you know, having this affair, there was at least one incident that involved domestic violence where the police ended up being called to their apartment. The woman he was having the affair with became pregnant, and he, I don't want to say coerced, but basically strong-armed her into having an abortion. I said the domestic violence, he struck her at least a couple times. So it's just like not great, really bad. Don't do that. Okay. Apparently he's come, you know, he's been forthright with his children, his adult children, and his wife about it, and has more or less owned up to it via his statement in the interview, which is, I guess, like, if I'm going to, I don't really need to give him credit for anything, but I don't know. He could have tried to sue her or something, which we've seen happen. So I'm glad he didn't do that.
It could have been worse, I guess.
The bar is on the floor, everyone. Okay. Yeah, he stepped over it. So congrats to that.
He stumbled over it in the way that you stumble over a toy your kid leaves out in the middle of the night when you're trying to go to the bathroom. So
yeah.
No points, but
he didn't step on the Lego, I guess. So yeah. In the fallout since this, he has been recast in a game that's actually supposed to come out very soon. This is Metaphor ReFantazio, which is a new Atlas game that's kind of, if you've seen the trailers, we showed a trailer for it actually.
Yeah.
On one of our shows. Yeah, it looks really great.
I didn't even know he was going to be in it.
Yeah, I didn't know that either, but he's not now. So
that's true.
That you know, changes everything there. And he also was scheduled to appear at a Detective Conan related event, but that was understandably canceled. So he's not really doing public appearances right now. So I guess we'll
at this point, he's done, right? Like, he's in his 70s.
He is, he's literally in his 70s. He could just, you know, horrible note to go out on, but there were other options. What he, you know, it sucks to see someone just like I said, like implode what was a substantial, beloved career like this. He admitted in the Bunshin interview that a lot of it was just, you know, being with a younger woman made him feel young, which I think is what we hear a lot in these sorts of scenarios.
I'm like 40 years younger than you right now. And guess how many domestic crimes I've done?
Zero.
So
I've done some domestic kitchen crimes, but nothing else really. Yeah.
I accidentally scraped my wife's car against one of those little concrete guard poles in a parking lot like 10 years ago.
I did that once at a Jiffy Lube. I left paint on the car. I was so mad because the two guys were there and they're like, you know, waving me through. I was like, this isn't my fault. This is your fucking fault. But it wasn't that bad. I was able to get it off, the paint off, and the scratch was, you know, kind of low. So it was.
Oh, no. I did the rookie thing. If I just kept going forward, I thought that would fix it. I was like, oh, no, I need to get out of this situation by. Yeah.
Guess I'll just power through it. Yeah.
Yeah. I felt really bad about that one. But that's look, I feel like a young man with my wife every day.
Because
we are not very old, and also she's great. And I hate that excuse. That's just so stupid. Oh,
yeah.
Does that mean you were like beating women and coercing them into abortions when you were in your 20s, dude? Like, what are you saying?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. He didn't admit to any other. And as far as I know, no one else has come forward and been like, yeah, he's been cruising his fan club for years or anything. So as far as the record, this is the only person this has happened to. I am skeptical. Yeah.
If you make it to 70, and my general rule of thumb is if you get the cops called on you for any kind of domestic violence, that's not the first time. That's like the 100th time, because that's a matter of escalation. Like, that doesn't just, you don't just wake up one day and decide to become an abuser like that.
Yeah. Right? You don't just start like smacking people out of.
Unless you have like a brain tumor, but he obviously doesn't because he's 70. So
right.
He's not anyway. Bah.
So let's cleanse and go to kaiju number 8, which the first image in this folder, James, you have to explain to me what this is. What is happening in this this post here? What is this?
I was honestly, I just wanted a shout out to whomever is doing the localization for kaiju number 8 on Crunchyroll. Thank you and good work translating this 2-second shot of like a page long report.
Okay, is that what this is? And this must have gone by so quickly too that I didn't.
It's 2 seconds. It's like they did not have to do that. And I always, whenever we get any of these in a show like this, and we're like, man, I wish I could read Japanese because I bet there's some fun little bits in there. And we actually got it. So, yeah. I don't know. Good job.
Yeah, this looks like it's just a stash. Okay. I remember when this was. Because Hoshina is looking at his phone about kaiju number 8. And this is the post he's looking at on his phone. Wow. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I wonder if this is a fan post or if it's... Because it looks a little bit like a forum post.
It's like a 4chan. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Or something like that. So... great job. Great shout out. Descriptions of a mouth large enough to swallow a person whole and octopus-like legs indicate that it may possess transformational ability. We saw the weird legs thing when he first got this power, didn't we?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So, yeah.
No mention of the nipple pissing, though, which is a big, big L.
Big disappointment.
Yeah.
Really.
That would go over great on 4chan.
Yeah.
Or whatever chan it is. Whatever the chan is. 2chan? Yeah. Is that the one in Japan that's big? Yeah.
I think so, yeah. So this episode of Kaiju number 8 is mostly just really cool monster fights. I feel like we've said that before, but if I have, this one is extra cool. I thought this was maybe the coolest one so far. James, agree or disagree?
Kikaru got a big axe.
Yes, she did.
That was my takeaway from this whole episode. You will, in fact, notice that I think half of those screenshots are just homegirl with a big axe.
Yeah. Yeah. They're like, listen, you're not at the level where you should get one of these. Or, I mean, officially, but power level wise, you are. So we're just going to give you a big axe with the Ava font on it, which was, you know.
Oh, no. This episode, I see you, author of Kaiju number 8, because. I'm assuming we are around the same age, and I'm assuming we both probably saw Asuka demolish all of those test units in the end of Ava with her big freaking double blade thing.
Yeah.
And we probably felt the same things and had the same thoughts, and you made that dream into reality. And I salute you, and my 14-year-old self is giving you applause from the past. So
yes.
Good job.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, Kikoru gets some really cool action shots. She's just slicing and dicing. Her and Hoshina get some really good action moments in here, all involving slicing and dicing, really. I just really liked Red Guy here. I just think this is like really good monster design. I like that he has double teeth for no real good reason. They look really uncomfortable, you know, because they're like, it's not... They're like right on top of each other, you know, kind of like.
They don't look like they're. I mean, I guess if he can retract the flat teeth, maybe, because they don't look very useful.
Yeah.
Because they're not long enough to like do any, you know, unless there's like a big gap in between.
What if he just wants to eat a salad though? Like, what if he's like off the clock and he just wants to eat a salad because he needs his vitamins. He's trying to stay in peak physical condition. You know, you need salad teeth and you need meat tearing teeth, and he's got both. Mm-hmm. So yeah. And I guess he just like controls wyverns, which we find out are typically like solitary kaiju, but he can do this weird like noise thing that kind of rounds them all up and gets them to do what he wants. Yeah. So yeah, I just thought he was a cool monster. Wow, James, you weren't kidding about the Kikaru screenshots. Let's just go through these.
What do you want from me? Look, there she is holding the axe. There she is swinging the axe, right? There she is hitting with the axe. There she is getting covered in monster gore because of swinging the axe. These are all necessary shots to get.
Yeah, yeah. They're very important for the plot development and understanding of the episode. As a whole.
Well, the real talk, I will say, do you feel like, I know not literally, I don't think the show is actually skipping things, but does it kind of feel like we skipped a couple episodes to go straight from the...
Oh, like one fight to the, like this invasion? Yeah,
We got that one episode where they were mostly just barbecuing, but I don't know.
Yeah.
Like the fact that like they're raining out of the sky and they're like attacking the home base, usually attacking home base... is like a more, I don't know, it feels also, I'm not saying it's bad. It's just
also not to like poke holes at things, but they not have any radar. Just monitoring the area around the base that would pick up on a whole bunch of kaiju flying directly towards them through the sky so that maybe they could deal with that before they
I guess they did. They just didn't pick up on them fast enough. I guess it depends on where they're coming from.
That's like, true. Also, you know, I'm just being a hole poker, which I mean, I don't usually enjoy hole pokers, but they've got a lot of high tech stuff. It just sort of seems like maybe they should have had that or something. But also Alexander Johnson, when is the summer watch party? It is the 28th at 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern. Thank you for reminding me that I need to make a giant list of all the trailers and watch notes for that.
Do we think this is going to be a bigger or a... I feel like is this going to be a bigger season than this one?
Numbers-wise, I feel like no. I don't think there's going to be like a substantially more series. I'm trying to think of like any of the... which ones I think are going to be particularly big off the top of my head.
That isekai, the Suicide Squad isekai, I think looks really good.
Yeah, the Suicide Squad isekai, and that'll be one of the first ones that that'll actually premiere before trailer watch party, because I'm not moving it earlier just for for this. The first three episodes of that are dropping on Max, and I believe Hulu. Definitely Max. It's dropping on Max.
I think Hulu too.
The first three episodes all on the 26th. So I get to play the game of, do I launch preview guide on the 26th? Because I don't want to really hold back on those three episode reviews because everyone's going to be talking about them. So we may launch preview guide on the 26th. It'll just have that in it, and then there'll be nothing added to it until the 1st of July, just to stay on top of it. But Jan mentioned ReZero Season 3. Is that actually this season, or is that October and they're just premiering the first episode at AX? I don't recall off the top of my head. I feel like it's October, but they're going to do like a 90-minute premiere for it at AX.
Are we going to get to the point where we only have like 30 new shows a season, but they're all double length premieres? Is that what's going to happen?
I loathe it. I don't like it. I don't like it. Yeah, probably. I mean, it's just, it's.
Why?
It's,
like, why is that? Is it?
I mean, because Oshinoko did it first. I feel like Oshinoko did it first and people.
Well, no, I feel like Ufotable did it first.
Oh, yeah.
With Fate. I feel like they were the ones that.
Really... Yeah, they did the hour with like Fate Zero, right? But it was still really rare at that point. And now we get, well, here's what I think it is. It's like they did the Oshinoko one and they're like, we can put it in theaters. And so they did it in theaters, which means that they were able to sell tickets and it was successful. Yeah. And then who keeps doing that now? Demon Slayer, only they don't even put the first, like, it's not a 90-minute premiere. It's the last two episodes of the previous season and the first episode of the next season. And they package that together and they put that in theaters.
I would have been so mad if I had to watch the first episode of this season in theaters. I'd be so upset.
I mean, it still ends up airing on TV, but like they do it a little bit earlier in theaters or whatever. And it, I feel like it's an extra revenue stream. This is just my informed opinion, but it's not necessarily the whole package of why they're doing this. I'm quickly scrolling through summer so I can tell you guys what's going to be good. I don't know. Monogatari is coming back for the people who like that. Elusive Samurai, I think there's some hype around that. Dungeon People. At first I was like skeptical about that one, but then after reading the synopsis for that, I think that actually looks like it might be good. It's based on a manga. There's some fairy tale. My Dear Friend Nokotan by Wit Studio looks weird.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Mayonaka Punch, which is again about like YouTubing, but it has a really good art design. So there's that one. They're sending Osamu Dazai into another world, and I don't know whether I should be offended by that or not. I really dislike Japan's relationship with that guy in popular culture.
Yeah. He wrote No Longer Human, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so
he was famously depressed and killed himself after multiple attempts. And they're like, wouldn't it be funny if we just made an anime character who always talks about how they want to die? And
if then, they isekai him after he walks into the river with his wife, I'm gonna
lose it. I know, right? Okay.
Yeah, not okay.
Yeah,
I always get him confused with the guy who tried to take over. He tried to do the coup, and then he committed seppuku, like in the diet. One guy.
When was this?
This is like in the 50s, 60s.
Okay, was it televised? Have I seen video footage of this?
There are pictures of it. Yeah.
Did he have a sword?
Mishima. Yeah, Mishima. Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ma'am.
He had a sword. Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The Dear Girl show, that one looks good.
Yeah, yeah, that's Nokotan. That's the Wit Studio one where it looks really weird.
What was I thinking of?
I'm not sure. How many deer shows are there?
No, I wasn't thinking of the deer show. I was thinking of the one, it's the one about the two boys that's kind of like a spooky ghost story. But that's not coming out this season, is it?
I don't think so, because it doesn't sound like anything that I know about. There's a bunch of other like weird throwback kind of stuff that sounds like it should have been made in the aughts. Like there's a show about twins, like a rom-com just about a pair of twins, you know, trying to choose which twin. Kinnikuman is back and the animation for that looks really good. It's just not like for me necessarily.
The Summer Hikaru Died. Thank you.
Oh yeah. No, that won't. There's no release date on that yet. I wouldn't expect that till like next year.
Yeah. That's what I was.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway. So yeah, I don't actually know what's going to be good scrolling through this. I'm not super hyped about anything.
And this season's I thought been I so had good. We've had
yeah.
Delicious in Dungeon. We've had Yatagarasu.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Although we still have a whole core of Yatagarasu, right?
Yeah, Yatagarasu will get me through the summer if I don't like
thank God
latch onto any of this. So
I was about to be upset if this show is going to be over in 3 weeks. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah, getting to Yatagarasu, I guess, like I said, Kaiju number 8, great fights, cool red dude in this episode, slicing
big axe,
you know, it's a fun time. Yatagarasu finally at least revealed one of the people that I'm suspicious about, which is Atsufusa, because I don't know. I couldn't figure that guy out. I think I said that a couple times in previous episodes. I'm like, what is this guy's game? Because he's like with Natsuka and seems to be dedicated to Natsuka, but then is trying to like warm up to Wakamiya about, you know, working with him for the good of Natsuka or something. And I was like, that doesn't jive.
Yeah, they were really going hard with, what's his name, Rokan, the red guy.
Yeah.
They were like, he's the untrustworthy one. That's
right. Look, he's in the dark and he's huge and scary. Yeah.
But then it turns out reverse is true. He's cool.
Yeah.
Turns out that the prince and his brother have been tight this whole time, which I thought was a really good development. I like that. That's like, I don't know. It's cute. It's like a nice little twist.
Yeah. That, you know, the way the episodes were framed were really leading us into thinking that Natsuka is trying to get his brother killed without saying, kill my brother. And everything we'd seen up to this point really did seem like that was what it was. And then he's like, no, dude, my brother's the best. And I just want, you know, my job is to be his protector and to make sure that, you know, nothing bad happens to him. Meanwhile, Asusa is just like not a nice guy.
Little cuckoo
lures Wakamiya and his Yukiya. Bodyguard. Yeah, and Yukiya and his bodyguard Sumio back to the red light district and attempts to poison them with ninja poison them and then like burn the whole place down. But that doesn't work because Yukiya is awesome. And he kind of comes in clutch there and manages to escape in those caves that we found out earlier. So that was foreshadowing that I completely forgot about because there's so much stuff happening all the time. Yeah. As soon as they brought it up, they're like, oh yeah, the caves that are underneath everything so that nobles can, you know, go hang out with prostitutes and then go back home without anyone seeing them on the street. So he figures out a way to, you know, he puts his brain on it and he's like, actually, now if I think back on all of the interactions that I've witnessed thus far, I can do an objection move via Ace Attorney and figure out where I'm supposed to go and put together that it was actually Rokan and Natsuka were actually pretty cool. So
I couldn't get a good screenshot of it, but there was that moment where we saw our first little glimpse of the prince's bird form because his arm.
He just transformed his arm because he was, you know, he was poisoned via incense. They gotta just get rid of incense. It seems like it causes a lot of problems for the nobility when people are sneaking in, paralyzing incense and doing nasty things to each other because of it. But yeah, he couldn't keep a grip on his sword because his muscles were all kind of still messed up. So he got a bird hand. And
so do you think, this was making me wonder, because he could still hold his sword with his bird hand, or, so can they do, like, partial transformations, or does the Kinu have, like, a special bird person form, where he's not, like, a big bird, but he's, like, a, you know, like a monster bird man
looking? Yeah, like more like a werewolf than a wolf, right? So more like a werecrow than a
crow. Yeah. Because his feathers weren't gold, because that's what I thought would happen.
Yeah, I wonder if the gold part is, like, activating some particular kind of magic or something, or,
Or does it mean that he's not the true Kinu? Was that, like, supposed to be a little hint that he isn't a golden raven, he's just a regular one?
I guess we haven't with our own eyes seen any proof of this golden raven form, right? We've only seen in flashbacks, like the one time the gold raven showed up to help Yukiya and his brother when they fell down that cliff, and that's the only time we've seen that, I think. And it's not like we saw it transform back into a person.
Is the raven supposed to be gold? I'm not being like, it's not a metaphor, right? It is supposed to be a gold-colored bird. I believe so.
I mean, that, again, is something that I just sort of assumed based on the flashback. Yeah. And I think things that maybe nobles have said up to this point. But you're right that, you know, when he was holding his sword, it was just black feathers like any other crow. What if Natsuka is really, really the Kinu? And this is and this is all an elaborate fake out so people don't target him. Probably not.
I don't know.
Probably. I don't really think that that's a viable theory, but maybe that's why I'm thinking maybe he only goes gold when he's like fully transformed or something. There could be a bunch of different reasons, but this was so cute. They did this little flashback and I was like, oh, this is just so cute.
But now Yuki is mad at the prince. Now his feelings are hurt. So it's like, am I supposed to feel happy or sad, Sho? You can't do this to me.
Yeah, I know. Yukio's sad, or he's, you know, yeah, his feelings are hurt is probably the best way to put it, because he misinterpreted. I think the prince knew he'd misinterpret it, because the thing gets brought up, and the prince is like, shut up. If you say that we know that his grandpa's Lord of the North, and he's going to think that we only picked him for that reason. And that's not true, which is why I've never brought it up until now. That's all like the context below the surface of this, but cat's out of the bag. So that means he's a direct cousin with Shiratama.
Yes.
Right? Same grandpa. Yeah.
And he also is hiding stuff. Not even Yukia is innocent. He was the one character. I was like, I feel like his whole thing is that he's just the one normal guy.
Yeah,
in a world full of crazy rich people. But no, he's also, by relation, a crazy rich person too.
Yeah, yep.
Man.
Yep. Although his mom was different than his brothers, right? That's what the difference was, is that his...
Yes.
So his mom is highborn, but his dad is just sort of like a... He's a noble, but not like of particular...
Like a local noble. He's like
Yeah. So
it's like the mayor of the village.
Townsville. Yeah. I watched the preview for the upcoming episode and it looks like, you know, it's mostly going to be about Yukia's feelings and working those out. So I'm sure that we'll get more of that stuff at the Cherry Blossom Palace wasn't in much focus except for at the very beginning of this episode where, you know, some of the ladies in waiting were trash talking Hamayu and
Masuho was like surprisingly like, no, I don't think she's defined by what her parents did, which is cool.
Yes.
But she did also admit to being an assassin. So it's like, what do you know, girl?
I had the same. I mean, I know that Yukia, I think, was the one who came to the conclusion that Hamayu probably wasn't really an assassin. Like that was a secondary cover up. So there isn't really a reason for her to come to that conclusion, I don't think. But regardless, yeah, it was cool that she stuck up for her like that. We still don't know about that crow that was like not dead though.
I know. I was
Sumio found it. Like what happened with that thread? Where is that going?
He didn't mention anything. Sumio, in fact, was weirdly absent this episode.
He got knocked out with the prince. But otherwise was, not really doing much. And I want
to
know.
They're going to have to do I'm assuming they're going to do some kind of flashback. Because that had to have been, that had to have been dealt with before they went to the red light district, right?
Yeah, right?
He was there like, oh, there's a dying bird over here.
Yeah. And that was like the end of that episode. And then they just didn't go back to it. And I'm like, I didn't forget. You have to go back to that. So, yeah, we still don't know what's going on with that. We don't know if that was Hamayu or a different bird. We know that Wakamiya's sister, Princess Fujinami, it hasn't, like, she seems very sad and is not interacting with people. We're not, you know, since the stuff with Hamayu happened.
Her handmaiden died, right? So she's probably not...
Her handmaiden died, and then... If word got to her, she would have found out that Hamayu's parents killed her mom.
Oh, yeah.
Those can be kind of traumatizing, upsetting. So there's still a lot of parts moving about, but I still don't trust Asebi. So She's just biding her time, right? Yeah, she's
just, you don't have one character smile and an OP full of frowns if you're not planning something. Maybe she's not evil, right? Maybe she's not, I don't necessarily think she's a bad guy, but
yeah,
it's gotten to the point where the show has done so little with her other than have her be kind of around for all of this crazy stuff.
Yeah, and have her like pass out or something. Or you know.
Yeah, we are kind of tipping the scale a little bit, unless something happens where, because before I'd said, you know, the show could kind of go either way, where either she's completely innocent and that's fine, or she is hiding something. But it's kind of getting to the point where unless her character gets something more to do other than just kind of be a third party to all this other crazy shit.
Yeah.
It's kind of weird that like the show started with her. It introduced her as one of the main characters of the show. That's at least the impression that we were given.
Yeah.
And then for the most part, she's just been kind of chilling, you know, getting dunked into rivers and getting slapped and not getting slapped, but getting insulted and stuff.
Yeah.
Accidentally slapping Shiratama.
Yeah.
And now it's like, well, what are you doing in this story? Because I will be disappointed if she's just there to be the one girl that the prince falls for.
Wasn't there some stuff going on with like the instrument that she got to that was like lent to her by Fujinami? Remember the Koto?
Yeah.
And they're the
scene. All that stuff to me is like, that, like, it has to be something.
Yeah. Because I think they were suggesting like it was her mother. Yeah. And there's still like the stuff with her mom. And we don't actually know who killed Sumomo. Right? Mm-hmm. Like that's what they're chattering about is that, oh, it was probably Hamayu. Because And it's like, it probably wasn't actually. She doesn't have a reason for it that we can think of.
No, I mean, because what did that accomplish?
Right.
I mean, up until like even what it's been like, what, 6 episodes?
Yeah.
We're still not entirely sure what killing Sumomo did.
Yeah.
Because it didn't benefit Shiratama.
No.
Like, all it did was make people suspicious of her, and it, you know, could have potentially contributed to the chaos that led to her boyfriend's death.
It didn't
benefit Hamayu. Like, if you're an assassin for the prince, you don't want other people dying like before you're ready to strike.
And she was real stressed out before she died. Like, she was not doing great. Yeah. So,
and again, there's that bit where she was like almost crying after delivering that letter to Asabi, and then that never got, like, there's got to be something there.
There's something there. We've got our eye on it. We're not letting it go. So, I mean, yeah. All right. Well, I think that about wraps it up for this week. Next week, we'll be back. Let me look at a calendar. Next week, the 18th, yes, we'll be back as usual. And then the following week, we may skip the 25th show just to go straight into that 28th trailer watch party. And then after the trailer watch party, we will be on a break because I'll be at Anime Expo covering stuff there until I get back, which will actually be the 8th. So we will probably have a show on the 9th of July, unless I'm too tired. And if I'm too tired, then we may go another week because summer convention season is crazy at Anime News Network, especially for editorial. So thanks again, everybody, for listening. And we will see you next week. Bye.
Bye-bye.